It's a mind manipulation technique that avoids not only opposition to what is the goal of the manipulators, it actually manipulates people to demand they do what they want to do anyway. You start by secretly creating a problem in the world. You then use the media, which isn't difficult, to wind up public opinion in relation to your manufactured problem to the point where public opinion utters the classic words, "Something must be done. This can't go on. What are they going to do about it?" And at that point, those who created the problem and got someone else to be blamed for it wound up that public reaction, then openly in the public arena, in the parliaments of the world, in the newspapers and on the television, offer the solutions to the problems they have created.
Immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Someone is responsible, and it's important for those of us who love liberty and resent Big Brother government, identify the philosophic supporters who have the most to say about the direction our country is going. These are the neoconservatives of recent fame. Granted, they are talented and achieved a political victory that all policymakers must admire. But can freedom and the republic survive this takeover? That question should concern us. Neoconservatives are obviously in positions of influence and are well-placed throughout our government and the media. The neoconservatives, a name they gave themselves, diligently worked their way into positions of power and influence. Above all else, they were not and are not conservatives dedicated to...
This is Media Break. You give us 3 minutes, and we'll give you the world.
Good morning. I'm Casey Wong with Jeff Perkins. Top story, Pretoria. The threat of nuclear confrontation in South Africa escalated today when the ruling white military government of that besieged city-state unveiled a French-made neutron bomb and affirmed its willingness to use the 3-megaton device as the city's last line of defense.
And the president's first press conference from the Star Wars orbiting peace platform got off to a shaky start when power failed, causing a brief but harmless period of weightlessness for the visiting president and his staff. We'll be back.
A Mexican crisis today when American troops participated in a joint raid with Mexican nationals against rebel rocket positions in Acapulco. Now this.
Red alert. Red alert. Red alert.
You crossed my line of death.
You haven't dismantled your MX stockpile.
Pakistan is threatening my border.
That's it, Buster. No more military aid.
Nuke them. Get them before they get you. Another quality home game from Butler.
Jeff Perkins with Casey Wong. Top story, Santa Barbara. 10,000 acres of wooded residential land were scorched in an instant when a laser cannon aboard the Strategic Defense Peace Platform misfired today during routine startup tests. Casey?
Yes, it was a day of mourning for the families of 113 people known dead at this hour, among them two former United States presidents who had retired in the Santa Barbara area. A day of mourning for a country.
Police union representatives and OCP continue negotiations today in hopes of averting a citywide strike by police scheduled to begin tomorrow at midnight. Justin Ballard Watkins has more.
They're still on duty, but what about tomorrow? That's the question we put to people in the crime-plagued Lexington area.
They're public servants. They got job security. They're not supposed to strike.
This is free society. Except there ain't nothing free, because there's no guarantees, you know. You're on your own.
Let's talk about Dan Rather reports in general. I mean, you made this transition to not an alternative, but a not mainstream network either. Do you find that it gives you a little bit more freedom to kind of dig into stories you want to dig into?
It does, and I'm really lucky and blessed at this stage of my career to have this work, that I have total, complete, absolute editorial and creative control, which virtually no journalist has. Mark Cuban, who owns the network, gave that to me. And look, we don't have as wide a distribution, wide a viewership as we'd like, but it's growing. But this kind of investigative reporting, somebody's got to do it. I wish more people could do it, but I consider myself lucky to be able to do it.
Now, you just brought up something extremely interesting that, you know, most journalists don't have the ability to kind of control their own content. In light of how journalism has changed over your career, do you think that control is getting worse or better, or has it just kind of been the same since the dawn of journalism?
No, it's getting much worse, and the reason is because in terms of true national distribution, only about 4 to 6 big international corporations now control the national distribution of news. And unfortunately, they're in bed with big government, whether the big government's in charge at any given time by Republicans or Democrats. And they have so much business to do in Washington, they don't want hard-edged investigative reporting, which is one reason he has so little of it.
Just like witches at Black Masses.
Yeah! Young people from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part, too.
They're doing their part. Are you? Join the mobile infantry and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship. We now break net and take you live to Fleet Battle Station Ticonderoga, deep inside the Arachnid quarantine zone, where the men and women of the Federal Armed Services prepare to attack.
DHQ, uplink on 2-1. You're on.
No one here in the AQZ knows exactly when the invasion of Sandathu will occur, but everyone's talking about it, and the talk says tomorrow. Here's a bunch of MI kids that look like they could eat bugs for lunch.
Yum, yum, yum.
So, Trooper, you're not too worried about fighting Arachnid?
Hey, shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs,
all
right?
I just hope it's not over before we get some.
Some say the bugs were provoked by the intrusion of humans into their natural habitat, that a live-and-let-live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
Let me tell you something. I'm from Buenos Aires, and I say kill them all!
Yeah!
We have the ships.
Now, here's your Pentagon Channel report.
The Navy celebrated Earth Day Thursday with a test flight of the Green Hornet. The Green Hornet is truly green. It's an FA-18 Super Hornet multi-role fighter jet that operates on biofuel. It runs on a 50-50 blend of conventional jet fuel and a plant called camelina, which is grown in the U.S. and thrives in the toughest of soils.
We have the weapon.
The future for American soldiers. A weapon so smart it can pick off an enemy no matter where he's hiding. It's called the XM-25. Never heard of it? That's because it truly is a secret weapon. So secret, up to now it's only been tested by the U.S. Army inside the guarded gates of this arsenal in New Jersey. Those who designed the weapon say it will change the rules of war as we know them.
We need soldiers. Soldiers like Lieutenant Stack Lumbridge.
Ruben's target area now tested.
And Captain Carmen Abanez.
This is the captain speaking. All personnel prepare for drop.
Soldiers like Private Ace Levy and Lieutenant John Rico.
Come on, you apes! You want to live forever!
We need you all. Service guarantees citizenship.
Ukraine is going to need a long-term military assistance program from the United States. Equipment both lethal and non-lethal. I see Ukraine has been invaded. Russia is massing forces on the border, provoking unrest, threatening to annex part of this sovereign nation, and possibly worse. When free peoples and patriots, victims of aggression, wish to defend themselves and their homes from further aggression, and when they ask for some modest means that can help them resist, I believe we should provide it, not to offer false hope or to harbor it ourselves, but simply it's the right and decent thing to do.
We have no military obligation here to defend Ukraine. And do you think there is a military option, even if we had an obligation?
I'd love to tell you that there is, Andrea, but frankly, I do not see it. I'm glad to see our U.S. military naval presence in the Black Sea. I wish that there were, but I think that these sanctions can really have a serious effect on the kleptocrats, who are the oligarchs and kleptocrats that are part and parcel of the power structure of Vladimir Putin, and those other measures that I told you about. I'd probably have some military exercises with the Baltic countries, who are parts of NATO. I'd accelerate, as I mentioned, membership in NATO for Moldova and Georgia, but I do not see a military option, and it's tragic. But I really believe that when Vladimir Putin looks around the world, sees what happened in Syria when the red line turned pink and the president didn't act, our acquiescence to their occupation of Georgia, all of the actions that have to do and indicate a decline of the United States.
Benefits to the region.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency.
Now, Rand Paul, pointing to things like that, wrote in the Wall Street Journal also, many of those clamoring for military action now are the same people who made every false assumption imaginable about the cost, challenge, and purpose of the Iraq war. They have been wrong for so long. Why should we listen to them again? Your response?
With all due respect, John, I was a strong supporter then of going into Iraq. I'm a strong supporter now. Everybody knows what my position is. There's nothing to be argued about there. But if we spend our time debating what happened 11 or 12 years ago, we're going to miss the threat that is growing and that we do face. Rand Paul, with all due respect, is basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we ought to be involved in that part of the world.
Called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess they don't know what to do about terrorism. And so they think, but they can attack states and they want to look strong. And so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists. And you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by it.
Reaching for the sky. Tearing down the night. Get ready, break
for the enemies of freedom, those who are our potential adversaries. They will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it, but we will not surrender for it, now or ever. Reagan went on to say, our forbearance, though, should never be misunderstood. Our reluctance for conflict should not be misjudged as a failure of will. When action is required to preserve our national security, we will act. We will maintain sufficient strength to prevail if need be, knowing that if we do so, we have the best chance of never having to use that strength. For our country's sake, certainly for our soldiers' sake, for the sake of every veteran who has ever donned a uniform and fought for this country, America's mission should always be to keep the peace, not to police the world. An America that did not seek to become involved in every conflict of the world would take better care of our nation's greatest resources, our soldiers, including improving a broken VA system and better overall health care for those who've served.
Hear the thunder? America is under assault by enemies foreign and domestic. Political correctness has silenced thought, and most Americans are programmed by the corporatist media into a false left-right paradigm. The truth is, there is an entrenched duopoly that controls the electoral process, so that whether you choose a jackass or an elephant, you get the same old, a new tyrant's face to front for the unelected and connected transnationalists. Congress is nothing but a rubber stamp for K Street-drafted autocracy under color of law on behalf of those who control the money supply and the foreign policy, irrespective of which party is in power. America is a police state at home and an empire abroad. Yet most Americans still think they're free because the money is flowing. Hedonism and entertaining distractions abound, and we live in fear of the most recent monsters, both real and fabricated. Is this the vision of the Founding Fathers? Is this truly the liberty for which the brave have bled down through the ages? No. This is nothing but a facsimile of freedom with a deceitful veneer of moral courage. So long as the secret owners of the Federal Reserve control the money, credit, and economy of these United States, our military might will be used to secure their fortunes across the globe, shed the blood of innocents, and tarnish the red stripes of those who fought for liberty and the white stars that shine on the field of blue, unwavering champions of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Mistakes are often useful lessons from which to learn, make amendments, and progress to ever higher achievement. But sometimes the mistakes are fatal, and correction is extremely elusive, if possible at all. As Americans, we have made several fatal mistakes, but the damage from the wounds hasn't killed this grand experiment in liberty yet. But we are far too close for comfort, and if a drastic course correction is not undertaken soon, we shall be no more. The longer we wait to revitalize and actuate our principles of liberty and virtue, the more extreme the required correction will need to be, and the unavoidable harm more severe. Our whole country is falling apart, and we talk about Putin, or Assad, or a missing plane, or Ferguson, a fake riot, or Obama, especially Obama, because if we get rid of him, all will be well, right? Give me a break. Obama is a problem, but the incompetent wuss is merely a symptom of the real problem. Who in the hell are we in the condition we're in to judge how other countries operate? If we allow suspicionless surveillance, martial law, controlled press, subsistence welfare, usury, cultural decay, moral decline, and perpetual first-strike warfare to dominate our country, are we doing anything other than holding onto a dream that has been made into a nightmare? one which we keep voting for, making it appear to be our choice. They're using this Ferguson thing and open borders to get conservatives and, quote, white voters behind police militarization. More surveillance and tracking, more control, and more war. War here and war abroad. The military aggression of our appropriated national government overseas merely adds to the military aggression right here on our streets. It may be fake or just another crisis we don't want to waste, but Ferguson is looking a lot like Fallujah. And I'm not just talking about the police aggression, but the mob that begs for it by losing all sense of self-mastery. A people incapable of controlling themselves will necessarily be controlled by someone else. They use Assad and Putin to make us think it is patriotic to kill the enemy, without letting us know that the real enemy is our own appropriated government. And to distract us even further, they create and assist real enemies like the Muslim Brotherhood and ISIS. People ensconced in the psyops of the globalists assume that the neocon agenda is for God and country, but it is in fact godless and internationalist. Contrary to liberty, conservatism, patriotism, and the principles upon which our republic was founded. This was inevitable from the founding because of the inherent spirit of democratism and equality. We're equal before the law. We're not equal in outcome, and we're not the same. When the only power, quote, power, the mob has is voting, that power is reduced to merely selecting between rulers who perform the same dastardly deeds. It is a false choice. When Americans put voting above service in the militia of the several states and on juries, we have already chosen a police-slash-welfare state, which necessarily demands a global pseudo-empire of militarism masquerading as foreign policy and jingoism masquerading as patriotism. Government is one part of the equation of law and order. The people are the other part. Without the former, anarchy and chaos ensue. Without the latter, there is no liberty, just a brave new world and Orwellian nightmares. As we appear to be divided between the false right and the false left, we are in fact divided between those who believe in limited government and a virtuous society and those who practice hedonism and prefer anarchy or tyranny. Ordered liberty needs government as part of our society to facilitate the protection of our rights, limited in scope and subordinate to the people. A virtuous people who exercise self-restraint and accept the duty to be free. Liberty is not license, and rights cannot be exercised without commensurate responsibilities. Liberty is practically gone because those of us on the, quote, right fight amongst ourselves over quibbling garbage instead of uniting on the broad principles upon which we largely agree, restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism, leading by example and prepared to defeat all enemies at any time. If America falls, don't blame someone else. It is our fault for allowing it. Our fatal mistakes are our own. We have allowed the uber-national corporatists to use media to fearfully manipulate us, plunder us with their financial malfeasance, and instill fear with their festering militarism abroad and militarized police at home. The chief control tool is democratism, which does not further liberty. It merely appeases the fickle mobs by satisfying disordered passions while binding them with invisible chains of their own choosing. If you want America to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, you actually have to be brave and desire to be free. Our fatal mistakes can be corrected, and the cost will be great. But the cost of infighting amongst those of us who love the old republic and the Constitution is far, far greater. And history will recall that we are the people who witnessed the end of America, where men were once free. Some will wait to see what happens. Others will be wondering what happened. If you're listening to Liberty's Thunder, you're one of the few who is willing to take action and influence what is about to happen. America is on the verge of fading away, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Sure, it'll look normal. The stars and stripes will fly, barbecues and ball games. But when the prepared chaos is unleashed, the mob will clamor for a savior to restore order and trade precious liberty for false security. This is not that which we inherited. It is that which our forebears fought against. Your valor will not be rewarded if you stand alone. We need to grow our ranks, get more Americans involved, realize that the situation is dire and know that only the bold will see liberty or death. Either work hard now to restore constitutional governance for a free and virtuous nation by taking the right wing of the welfare warfare party of the District of Corruption and restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism backed up by the biggest, baddest military on the planet, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who perpetuate an empire abroad and a police state at home. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the neocons and the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Strangelove, broadcasting to you from the District of War, the Imperial City, Captain Cave War.
Hey.
You there, Captain Cave War?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. I was waiting for your little clip. Anyway, you know, I forgot
your intro. My bad. Here it is.
I know. Caveman! There we go. So, yeah, that's why you had a blank space there. I was waiting for that. Something to fire me up and tell me who I am. You know, I was just doing a massive project in the last couple of days. Clearing out that 1,900 posts or comments or articles or whatever, you know, you call them on the BRICS thread. And so I had an opportunity, and this is the second time I've cleared that thread, so it goes back to, I don't know, the newest, you know, the oldest stuff was like May. And
you're talking about the thread in Liberty's Talk on Facebook, right?
Yeah, the group.
The group.
Well, if I say the group, then they can never find it, and then they don't have to join, and then I don't have to worry about them. Anyway, it was a journey, if anything, because I was scanning titles, I was reading paragraphs, I was, you know, quick listening, you know, to videos and things like that, you know, to go, do I want to save this, and, you know, because I'm going to build a file. Because as new people come on, if they don't, you know, if they catch us in the middle of a conversation about what's really going on in the world and what is BRICS, they're going to be totally lost because it is not a conversation in this country. And because it's not a conversation in this country, then they're going to believe what the mainstream media is telling them about, i.e. the Ukraine, Russia, what's going on in Iraq, what's not going on here, there, you know, and all this other crap. And so they're just basically useful idiots, you know, to get all geared up for the next frickin' war. And for those of us who lived through the propaganda machine of the invasion into Iraq and actually can remember, you know, the onslaught of data and information and how that game was played out, you know, to get us to all gear up and get all of our young men to join up and go fight the evil of the world, then it's not a surprise that it's all bullshit and it's all spin. And then if you go back a few years and you remember not so much the Kuwait situation, because that was just, you know, that was a little bit of a different scenario. But if you go back to the Clinton era when they blew up Yugoslavia and broke it up into multiple countries based on lies. You know, you can just go back for years and years and years if you are willing to do the research. Most people aren't. But there's always a spin all the way back to the First World War. There's always a spin. There's always a whole different agenda going on than you think is going on, you know, whether it's industry or politics or oil or, you know, corporate or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, they figured Americans are about sick to death of war, and they're sick to death of not really knowing the truth. And we saw that when they started talking about bombing Syria based on a bullshit false flag that wasn't the truth, which has been proved later that it was a lie. It wasn't Assad. And, you know, the UN came out with that investigation, but they're ready to blow the frickin' country to hell. You go to Libya. I think Libya is probably one of the least researched invasions of all this stuff that's been going on the last 15, 20 years because it just happened so fast. I mean, we didn't have a chance to get the spin machine up and running. They just were like, oh, Arab Spring, he's killing his people. Bam, let's have a no-fly zone. Whoops, we blew his country up. Oh, look at that video. Yeah, there he is. I guess they killed him, you know. I mean, it was quick, and so it never really had much of a public discussion. But, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about the Middle East, about, you know, all the things that, you know, have happened and haven't happened, and the truth and the lies and the bullshit. And Americans are sick of this crap. And you go through these cycles, you know, if you look back in history, but they needed a really big, scary enemy. So they made one called ISIS or IS, depending on your definition, according to Clinton. And so now we got this big, bad, scary, hairy monster that we created and funded, and they're using that, you know, to get you all geared up to go back in the same hellhole, you know, and lose a bunch more of the youth of this country and spend billions of dollars we don't have, which we'll have to borrow. And at the same time, you know, they toppled a legitimate government in the Ukraine, you know, all of our little NGOs and McCain and Newland and all their little games, and they went in there and they toppled a country, and then they figured, okay, we got to demonize Russia, which actually has never stopped since 1991 when Russia fell, because the goal, if you study the New American Century, was never allow a foreign country, especially Russia, to ever rise up again and be a competitive dynamics against the world empire of the USA, because there's a lot of power when you're the empire. You know, you can push countries around, you can make them sign contracts for loans and change their social structure and change their laws and force your corporations in there and make them accept GMOs, whether they want them or not, you know, make them accept a military base or two or three or four. You know, I mean, when you're the empire and all the financial banking systems most of them revolve around the U.S. dollar, you have a pretty good run, you know, and you can have a $3.6 trillion budget and spend money like hell and print money like hell and force other countries to take your fake money, you know, and just have a good old time. I mean, I guess it's nice to be an emperor, but you know what happens with all empires? I don't know, study history, you know, and when history runs out, go back to the Old Testament. You know, we've had empires after empire, after kings, after queens, after, you know, Greece, Rome, the fall of Rome, and it's just been this never-ending dynamics of we got to go invade somebody else and blow them up. Well, America had gotten very good at selling people this idea that there was a monster we had to go save the world from. And I kind of thought, I didn't think they could pull it off this fast, but they did. And so they got everybody all geared up and everybody sitting in front of the television screaming, you know, we got to go kill Putin and we got to go invade Iraq and we got to go bomb Syria. And for those of us who pay attention, we knew that the strategy in Syria, because Putin foiled the invasion of Syria, and that it was going to come back around a year. In fact, I read people who said, watch, next year this is what they'll do. And what? There they are. And they're selling it to an unaware public who still sits in front of the damn cable TV and listens to the same liars that got us in the last two wars that have literally destroyed the core base of our economy in this country, which would not even be functioning right now if the Federal Reserve wasn't printing money and dumping it in the system every month. And I guess what amazes me in this whole picture is that people fell for it again. And that's the frustrating part, because we're a lot better off in terms of alternative media, you know, and things like that than we were, you know, when Iraq started or Afghan started or even Libya started. It's much more dynamic. There's much more, many more players. There's better sources. You know, there's better information. Everything works bigger, better, faster. And yet the majority of Americans still go to the talking heads and really, you know, Neocon Central, Fox Noise, you know, and the rest of them are bad too. But it just amazes me how many people who say I'm a conservative still get their news from Fox News or listen to Hannity or Beck or the rest of the talking heads whose whole agenda is to sell war, because we don't make anything, Rex. You know, and I was watching a pretty good guy on economics, Baloney, and he was showing this chart. He said, we have more businesses going out of business in this country than we have new businesses starting. Now, you're talking about America, folks. You're talking about the United States of America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, free enterprise, you know, small businesses, hey, the engine of America.
A couple of head shops opened up in your city. You got a couple of head shops opened up in your city recently.
Yeah.
In Denver.
That's yeah. But ours is socialistic free enterprise. It's so tied to the state. You know what I mean? But, you know, here we are in a situation where we continually have flatlined for 5.5 going on 6 years since this guy's been president. And we have solved none of our problems. You know, and all you got to do, I mean, look at Chicago. Who even talks about Chicago? Chicago should be the conversation of the century in this country for failure, for an example of what's coming down the pike for many cities around this country. And yet it's not even a conversation. Barely made a blip on the screen. I actually opened a thread thinking, oh, we're going to have a conversation here. And it went poof, poff, and it was gone. And I was like, wow, that didn't work, you know. And we won't talk about the things that are important. We talk about frivolous shit that means nothing. You know, we post the news of the day. We get all caught up in the hype and the crap of the Obama this, Obama that. You know, we've been playing the 2016 election for the last 6 to 8 months. You know, my guy, this guy, that guy, we should run this guy. And I'm like, who in the hell is he? You know, I mean, like, everybody's looking for the next savior to run, you know. And here they are, destroying our economy continually. Real economic conversations aren't even being held. They're playing this game and creating these monsters overseas so that we can gear up, increase more military spending, and we can go fight some more wars. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And in that whole dynamics, in that whole conversation or lack of it, nobody is talking about the U.S. reserve currency or the U.S. petrodollar. Nobody talks about it except us, you know, and Rickards and, you know, and Pepe and a few other people. But there is this whole dynamics occurring around the world. The only thing that allows us to be an empire and to maintain 800 or 1,000 bases around the world and all this money we shove into manipulating other countries and backing dictators and funding and building rebels to fight dictators that we want out of power and all this shit. The only reason this can happen is because we are the reserve currency of the world. Here's an important point that most people don't get because they don't understand what a reserve currency is to start with. But, you know, go listen to our economics show. Was that last week? I don't remember. But here's the important thing. It's going bye-bye, and it's been going bye-bye since the late 90s. You know, we had the dot-bomb crash, and the euro started climbing. China started becoming a world power. Russia was, you know, basically was growing like crazy. You know, all these emerging markets, all the money was moving to the east. So it was already a shift in the reserve currency balance in terms of who was the master player. We lost 20 points in the game, and it continues to go down. And here's the scary part, it depends how you look at it, because I don't get emotionally caught up in this conversation because it's a reality, and you need to understand what's coming down the road. Countries are exiting the U.S. dollar as fast as and you and I have talked about this multiple times, going, oh, when's it going to happen? You know, when's this going to occur? And I follow guys who are into this thing, and nobody can really pin it down. But one thing I've noticed is an acceleration, especially since the BRICS banks were formed when they had the meeting in Brazil this summer, and they launched the new BRICS banks. And there's another bank that nobody knows about, and that is China's launching a bank to compete directly against the World Bank on top of the BRICS banks. So we have countries around the world that are going, enough war, enough sanctions, enough interfering with our internal politics, enough manipulation in our trade, enough, enough, enough. And there are countries, you know, with China, Brazil, India, you know, Russia, and South Africa who formed this consortium. There's, I bet there's 100 countries just sitting in the wings, ready to join and sign up and be part of that, just to free themselves from the empire. And, you know, that's a tough thing to chew on as an American, because it would almost sound like, well, that's anti-American. Well, I'm like, well, they quit blowing other countries up. You know, I don't know why people can't take off their hat for a minute and put themselves in the shoe of another human being in another country and think about, what would I think if somebody did this to me? What would the U.S. do if Russia caused a revolution in Mexico and then started, you know, saying we're going to put ballistic missiles on the frickin' border? What do you think you would do? I mean, honestly.
I think that's called the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, and it's even bigger than, but it's even bigger than that, because you know, when you look at the Ukraine, it's 65% of their trade and exports go to Russia. They're Russians. You know, it's all historically, we're talking 1,000 years going on here. All of a sudden, we topple that country and put in some, you know, the chocolate king, you know, this puppet freaking billionaire who's been in the same crap, you know, like John McCain. When I listen to him, I just want to puke, you know, talking about oligarchs and things like that. Who in the hell do you think Poroshenko is? You know, he's just another freaking oligarch. He's a multi-billionaire. And they figured, okay, we got to get somebody in here that people will kind of like, and then that'll do our bidding. And they're murdering their people. You know, we get this thing on the media about this one journalist, you know, that gets killed by this ICE guy, right? And everybody's freaking the hell out. Well, do you know 9 journalists have been killed in Ukraine? Did you know that? No, I didn't know that. Yeah, because you watch Fox News. That's why you didn't know it. If you're so freaking concerned about journalists, why don't you look at where they've killed 9 of them and tortured, and they still got one missing? Well, those Nazi shock troops that your tax dollars paid for. You know, what in the hell? You know, why can't people stop and break free of that long enough to actually look out in the world and say, how would I feel if that was happening to me? You know, we're up the creek. You know, the U.S. dollar is being exited as fast as possible because that's called economic warfare. Why? Because people are sick of getting sanctioned. It's like when France said, we're not going to stop this deal we got going with Russia and play your little sanction game with Putin, because we got this $1.3 billion, you know, 3 big mega ships, these minstrel ships that are, you know, helicopter, blah, blah, blah. And they're like going, we're not cutting this deal. This is a contract. We don't have a problem with Russia. And so we go in there and start screwing with their banking system and make them give us like $9 billion, because if they don't, then what we do is we cut them off from their ability to trade in U.S. dollars or do exchanges or whatever, you know, all the complexity of the economic game that's going on. And, you know, countries get sick of this crap after a while. They've been doing it for a long time. And the world is changing. Our economics in the world is changing. The power structures in the system of the world is changing. And here's the problem, Rex. We have a bunch of embedded assholes who've been in there so long and been in power positions so long and they've been at the top of the world empire, to able to tell anybody in the world what the hell you're going to do or not do, you know, jump, how high, you know, whatever you want to do, blowing up a country, invade a country, topple a country, you know, and fund this group to cause a revolution over here. And we've been able to do it for so long. And now all of a sudden we're not able to do it anymore. There's countries rising up going, no, we don't agree with that. No, we won't support that. No, we're going to vote against that in the UN. And these people that we keep putting back in power are freak, like the John McCain's. That's just one example. There's hundreds of them, and you keep voting them back in. And here's the problem: they're freaking out because they're losing their empire, and they're going to make some really bad mistakes and get us in a really big war. And I got echo, so I'm going to go back to you.
Okay. Is this still an echo? All right, he's gone. Those are all very good points. And for you kiddies out there in radio land, Chris was talking about the group. That is Liberty's Talk on Facebook. So make sure you get into the group, Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Lots of data, lots of information, and it's oddly enough, and Chris works hard at it, one of the most organized places on that psychotic social media tool we call Facebook. Keep in mind, he just used a very technical term, embedded assholes. And what he means by that is the assholes that you have allowed to control your government. And when I say you, I mean you, because let's face it, whether you vote for him or not, we've all helped this draconian system of control take over what used to be the American Republic. And if you know about it, then it's your responsibility to wake the others up. Now, in regards to Foley, I mean that was horrible. And if you've seen it, it's just terrible. This was a guy who was just reporting on what's going on and was kidnapped, probably for a ransom. Of course, we don't negotiate with terrorists, so we didn't pay the ransom. And then conveniently, he was killed right when we need an excuse to bomb Syria again. Right, so you 90% of the American public turned on the federal government and woke up last year and prevented us from bombing Syria. But see, that's the thing about the neocons; they are very, very tenacious. Remember, in the beginning of that opening clip, you heard General Clark talk about toppling 7 countries in 5 years. Well, here we are, 13 years later, we haven't toppled all 7 of them yet. So clearly, timetables can change, and the only reason that it slows down is because of you, because you woke up. And what happened with Syria the first time? A lot of people woke up. This time, I don't know. They got Foley getting killed on YouTube, so that hits your emotional heartstrings, and the Christians being persecuted, which is absolutely terrible. What they never mentioned, though, is that none of this would be happening on this scale. I mean, Muslim jihadis always want to kill people, but on this scale, if we didn't arm, train, and fund what is now ISIS. That's the psychotic part that they always leave out because we don't want to take the blame. Well, you know what? If you engage in a fatal mistake, then own up to it so that you can fix it. Don't try to cover it up and perpetuate it, but that's the whole scam. They want that to keep going on. So now we're considering bombing ISIS in Syria. Well, that's what they wanted to do in the first place. Now, granted, they wanted to bomb Assad, not ISIS, but, let's face it, they're going to bomb whoever the hell they want. The story is we're going to bomb ISIS because they chopped off a reporter's head. Now, the interesting thing is, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Well, but, why do we pay the ransom? Because we paid the Haqqani network a ransom for Bergdahl, and we also gave them 5 Taliban terrorists, and that guy was a deserter. This guy was a reporter. He didn't do anything wrong. So, get past the bullshit that they feed you on the Fox News and the CNN. They're not fair. They're not balanced. They're not the most trusted name in news. They're unfair. They're unmedicated, and they're not trustworthy. So start digging around. For now, you still have access to global media through the Internet. And that's what Chris has in Liberty's Talk, so get in there and take a look at it. Of course, they could, turn off the Internet because you might get wise, but while you have it, use it. And, we've been doing this theme, these fatal mistakes, for a couple of episodes. And remember, anytime you want to listen to any of our shows, just go to blogtalkradio.com/Liberty's Thunder, and all of the shows are there. And the last two were Fatal Mistakes, Financial Malfeasance, and Fatal Mistakes, forget what it was the first time, but anyway, fearfully manipulated. Next week we're going to do fickle mobs, okay, because let's face it, it's the voting mobs that have allowed this to happen. And whether the system of voting works or doesn't work, or whether it's rigged or not rigged, that's not the point. The point is that you have to be aware. You have to be awake. You have to understand what's going on and get other people to understand what's going on, okay? So that's the key. Now, you got to work the process. okay? And that's what we're talking about here. The kind of the overarching theme from this show from when we started way back before the Republican convention in 2012, the overarching theme was that people who are conservative, libertarian, constitutionalist, more or less, I guess for lack of a better word, right-wing in their outlook, we tend to infight a lot because we're all individual. We all feel strongly about how we see things. We all have our particular viewpoints. And it's not about controlling other people, but about asserting our individuality and our way of looking at the world. Well, that's wonderful. The other side doesn't have that. They're a friggin' hive mind. And the other side is becoming significantly numerous, at least as far as the control mechanism is concerned. We have to work together. If we stay divided, we're going to lose. And what does that mean, work together? The most important thing is awareness. You also have to work hard. And that doesn't mean just show up to vote or promote a candidate in the primary or in November. I mean, voting may or may not be effective. They've got algorithms in the computers and all that kind of stuff, but nevertheless, they can't cheat if you make it so overwhelmingly clear that we voted for a particular issue or a particular candidate. They can only cheat when it's close, which is why they like to suppress the votes. And the way they do that is running shitty candidates, or they run, you know, alternate candidates for you to vote in other parties. And I'm not against alternate parties. I would like to see multiple parties and independents running, but the rules are rigged. So right now, alternate parties serve only as a protest vote or to suppress overall turnout. You have to change the rules at the local level. You got to get onto your county board of elections. You've got to get people who understand the Constitution into your state houses so that they can adjust the rules and open up the ballots and get rid of the voting machines and go to write-in ballots and paper ballots, because that's where we have to go if we want open elections. Fair elections, free and equal elections. In the meantime, you got to slow the process down. We've delayed the bombing of Syria by over 12 months now. So we can slow down the process. The way you slow it down is you take a hold of one of the wings of the national duopoly and you get people in there who are actually going to stand up and cause problems. Yeah, that's right. I said people are going to get up and cause problems, because when your government is controlled by neocons and transnational banksters and people that have no interest in the success of the American Republic, then the people that you want, the heroes, the champions, are the ones who are causing problems for this system. And the system is so far down the road. It's been a century coming, and especially in the last 30, 40 years, that you got to have more people who create these problems for them. Okay, that's not being unpatriotic. That's not being a legislative arsonist. That's not being an extreme right-wing psycho, teabagger, blah, blah, libertarian nut job. That is simply about trying to get us back from this leftward ratchet that we've been on for a century that has practically brought us to our knees. Now, most people are looking around and saying, well, the money's flowing. There's stuff on the shelves in the stores. You know, our military's strong. The stock market's up. Everything looks fine. Well, it always looks fine right before it falls apart, and it only requires one small little smidgen of an actual event or a false flag to unravel the whole thing, and they'll take advantage of whatever they can. This Ferguson thing, you know, it seems that this kid, 18-year-old young man, who was killed by a police officer, was in fact involved in petty crimes. Does that mean he should have been killed? No, but if he did, in fact, rush a police officer and injure his eye and then come after him, you know, these things happen. So what you have to understand, as tragic as that is, it does not require a National Guard and militarized SWAT response, and it shouldn't have people going in there to gin up the hatred and the division and back and forth, and the whole thing escalates. But like Rahm Emanuel said, never let a crisis go to waste. So this event, which doesn't appear in itself to be a false flag, is being used to manage your mind. That's why it's on the news all the time. You know, there's been a lot of other police-involved shootings, a lot of other murders in the meantime. You haven't heard anything about those. Just like Chris mentioned, all the reporters who have been killed by the terrorists in Ukraine, you haven't heard anything about it because we're not trying to bomb Ukraine. We're trying to bomb Russia. But before we do that, we're going to bomb Syria. So whatever the agenda is, they manage the information to get you to look at it a certain way. And you have to have other facts and the ability to think critically and act like a detective and piece the things together, because no one's going to come out and tell you this is the truth. Everybody has an angle and an agenda, but you have to piece it together, look at the perspectives, and you can discover the truth. Or at least enough of approximation of what actually happened to know what the course of action should be, or at worst, what the course of action shouldn't be. And whether Assad's a bad guy or not, and whether ISIS is a real jihadi threat, well, clearly now they've more or less become one, is not the point. The point is, do we go in there and get involved and topple a secular Arab regime, or do we let the local neighborhood take care of its own problems? Granted, we've caused some of those, so we do have some responsibility, so we should lend tactical support and maybe weapons and that sort of thing. And when, you know, we generally want a non-interventionist policy, but we've already been intervening, and now we've created this problem, and now we got to fix this problem. But that doesn't mean that we have to go in there with an army and topple the regime and all that kind of stuff. These ISIS pricks couldn't do much if they weren't trained by America, if they weren't funded by America, and if they weren't given the weapons by America. Remember, Jihad Jane Muhammad had, you know, a hard-on to go into Syria illegally, by the way, as a senator. He went in there illegally to hang out with these friggin' terrorists and then come back and yell at anybody who says that he was hanging out with terrorists and say, oh, that's not true. I didn't take my picture with terrorists. I know who the good guys are, my friend. Bullshit, John. You don't know dick. You're a fucking fool. And you're causing chaos, and this guy's never met a war he doesn't like. I think he just likes to kill people, but he's such a wuss he won't do it himself, so he wants to appropriate our government and use our military to kill people. This is insanity, and the problem is that the worse it gets over there, look, there's always going to be people who are trying to kill you, all right, period. War is a state of fact. It is not going away. For all you pacifists out there, the only thing you're advocating is giving up and losing. There will always be war. But war with American interests. And, of course, for those of us, and most of us in this country still identify as Christians, when we see Christians being persecuted, we want to do something about it. Well, by all means, go ahead and do something about it. But our government, our collective government, does not have a responsibility to do anything for anybody unless it has a genuine American interest. And that's a very clear distinction. So, you know, if you happen to be a huge fan of the state of Israel and, you know, we got to protect them and all that, no, they got to protect themselves. All right? If you want to save Christians from persecution by Muslims and being killed all over the place, if there's an American interest, it's our government's responsibility. If there isn't, it's up to you. All right? Now, sometimes you have to have national coalitions on these things. In fact, the Pope recently called for action to be taken because these psychotic, organ-eating, raping, plundering, crazy ISIS jihadis have to be stopped. But that doesn't mean that we have to be the invading army to do it. But see, nobody wants to cooperate with us because we've been pissing on them for so long, and they're fed up with us. When I say they're fed up with us, they're not really fed up with us as American people. They're fed up with the pricks that are ruining our government. And oddly enough, we've killed an hour already. I know there was an 18-minute clip. There's a lot of data in there. One of the things Chris and I try to do, and we pay to do this show, and we do it because it's important, and we're not hearing this stuff almost anywhere else. But the reason that we do this and the reason we pay to do it and don't put advertising on it is so that we can bring you these clips that you may not have heard because maybe you don't watch certain channels or have access to certain things or even time, and we try to put it together for you and encapsulate it in 2 hours every Sunday evening. So that's an important thing. You really need to listen to it, and you can go back and listen to any of the shows, including this one, anytime by going to our page. And you just click on the title of the show, and it plays right in your browser free of charge. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, you can right-click on the download button, and you download an MP3 to your device. You can play it in an MP3-enabled device. You can send it as an email to somebody. You can burn a CD and take it to your meetings and hand it out at rallies and that sort of thing. The important thing is that nobody knows this show exists or any of this is happening unless you tell them. That is the only way anybody knows about this. If you're on Facebook, go to Liberty's Thunder on Facebook and like the page. And when you click the like button, there's a drop-down menu that says Get Notifications. Click Get Notifications. We don't send out like 6 million things, so you won't get much, but you'll at least get the weekly show when it's broadcasting. And we appreciate everybody's support as we're sharing the show and getting the show out there and inviting people. Nothing works better than a personal invitation. And I know sometimes my language gets a little flowery. I'm trying to cut it down, but it happens. This is these topics get me a little pissed off, especially when we're killing, spending money and sending arms to people who are killing Christians around the globe in the name of America. It's insane, and it gets me upset. But you don't have to agree with all my language. You don't have to agree with everything Chris and I say. What we're trying to do is bring you facts that are being obfuscated by the
corporate-controlled media. You heard Dan Rather in that opening clip. Now, well, you think what you will of Dan Rather. The guy's been in media for a long time. He knows how the game is played, and he clearly told you there's about six transnational corporations that control 95% of the media in this country, and you think you're getting the information that you want. You're only getting the information they want to feed you. That is a huge problem, and so we're trying to counter that, and we're trying to get you to think. We're trying to get you to open your eyes and apply the principles that of liberty, the conservative principles, the you know, which are libertarianish in nature also, and apply them to the facts on the ground so that we can work together to roll this monstrosity back, okay? You don't have to agree with everything, but we want you to think. You need to understand this stuff, and you need to think. So, you know, we appreciate you sharing the show. Keep it up. I'm going to play we got two really good clips for you. The topic is festering militarism. And it's not just having a military or a militia or being military capable. That's an important thing. Any nation that wants to survive has to have a military capacity for defensive purposes, which sometimes requires going overseas and being offensive, but it does not require preemptive war. Okay, that's an important thing to have. But militarism is where we use the military for immoral purposes, for the perpetuation of an empire for a few people, at the very top of the pyramid, at the expense of everybody else. And it's happening not only overseas, as you can see, that we're involved in God knows how many conflicts, and we're about to, you know, go to war with Russia and China, which is very, very dangerous, but you're seeing the militarism here at home. Remember something, the welfare-warfare state are not two separate and distinct things. They are one thing. They just have two aspects of manifesting. And welfare sounds like a nice word. It's even in the preamble of the Constitution. But we're not talking about giving people a hand up when they need it. Welfare means they take care of you like a dumb child so long as you do what they want you to do. And it's militaristic in its nature, which is why the police is being militarized and why we're purging our cops of the ranks of people who stand up for the Constitution. We're getting rid of sheriffs. We're antagonizing sheriffs who stand for the Constitution, which is a very important office, by the way. You better know who your sheriff is. And militarizing the police through the Pentagon, basically turning America into a war zone, and then declaring that the president can have a kill list so that you can become a target without due process. It is completely upending the Constitution. And it's a serious problem. And if you're not aware of it, get aware of it and get others aware of it. And don't be afraid of it because we outnumber them. I'm not talking about a revolt here, but I'm talking about an awareness, because if you're aware, they have to roll back. Because they can't do these things without your consent, and most of us give them our consent by doing nothing other than going along with it. Get people aware not to go along with it. We want to get into these clips, but Chris, I'm going to throw it to you, see if there's anything you want to add before we roll into some war.
No, I'm good. Play a clip.
We're going with the longer one. Okay, this one's about 15 minutes. It's very important. There's a lot of good information in here. It talks about the nature of war, and not war specifically in the sense of armed conflict, and we're not even talking about just war, and I'll touch on that in a little bit. This is talking about how war is being used as a control tool both here and abroad, and you're a victim of it, whether you know it or not, so get to know it. We'll be back on the other side of this.
The splitting up of the world into three great superstates was an event which could be and indeed was foreseen before the middle of the 20th century. With the absorption of Europe by Russia and the British Empire by the United States, two of the three existing powers, Eurasia and Oceania, were already effectively in being. The third, East Asia, only emerged as a distinct unit after another decade of confused fighting. The frontiers between the three superstates are in some places arbitrary, and in others they fluctuate according to the fortunes of war, but in general they follow geographical lines. Eurasia comprises the whole of the northern part of the European and Asiatic landmass from Portugal to the Bering Strait. Oceania comprises the Americas, the Atlantic Islands, including the British Isles, Australasia, and the southern portion of Africa. East Asia, smaller than the others and with a less definite western frontier, comprises China and the countries to the south of it, the Japanese islands, and a large but fluctuating portion of Mongolia and Tibet. In one combination or another, these three superstates are permanently at war, and have been so for the past 25 years. War, however, is no longer the desperate, annihilating struggle that it was in the early decades of the 20th century. It is a warfare of limited aims between combatants who are unable to destroy one another, have no material cause for fighting, and are not divided by any genuine ideological difference. This is not to say that either the conduct of war or the prevailing attitude toward it has become less bloodthirsty or more chivalrous. On the contrary, war hysteria is continuous and universal in all countries, and such acts as raping, looting, the slaughter of children, the reduction of whole populations to slavery, and reprisals against prisoners, which extend even to boiling and burying alive, are looked upon as normal, and when they are committed by one's own side and not by the enemy, meritorious. But in a physical sense, war involves very small numbers of people, mostly highly trained specialists, and causes comparatively few casualties. The fighting, when there is any, takes place on the vague frontiers whose whereabouts the average man can only guess at, or around the floating fortresses, which guard strategic spots on the ceiling. In the centers of civilization, war means no more than a continuous shortage of consumption goods and the occasional crash of a rocket bomb, which may cause a few scores of death. Bottomless reserve of cheap labor. Whichever power controls equatorial Africa or the countries of the Middle East or southern India or the Indonesian archipelago disposes also of the bodies of scores of hundreds of millions of ill-paid and hard-working coolies. The inhabitants of these areas, reduced more or less openly to the status of slaves, pass continually from conqueror to conqueror, and are expended like so much coal or oil in the race to turn out more armaments, to capture more territory, to control more labor power, to turn out more armaments, to capture more territory, and so on.
A long-standing member of the Rockefeller apparatus, and as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations of long-standing, you're fully aware that there is an elitist core in this country that has seen value in subsidizing communism, of protecting communism.
It has?
Sure.
You're accusing me of subsidizing communism?
No, I'm saying
because
that
I happen to belong to a
foreign
policy
core.
study group?
No, wait a minute. There is an elite core in this country that has dominated American society.
Well, I'm not one of them.
The Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations.
State Department, I suppose.
Well, let's face it, they have dominated the State Department for 40 years, and pretty much openly.
All right, but what are they trying to do?
Well, their objective is to try to bring about a gradual transition in our society, a dissolving of sovereignty, and a moving steadily to the left on the political spectrum.
Well, who are they?
The elitist groups that I mentioned, particularly key individuals and policymakers in the Council on Foreign Relations.
Is the International Monetary Fund part of this?
Well, I would say the International Monetary Fund has certainly been set up for the purpose of facilitating that transfer of sovereignty and transfer of wealth on the road.
All right, we elected Mr. Conservative.
Let me just finish the point, because otherwise we're going to have a lot of unanswered questions, that you are looking at a group that has worked to bring about a dissolution of national sovereignties on the road to world government. And certainly you're familiar with the local professor, Carol Quigley, who has been part of your club, in which he admitted all this. And he said in his book, Tragedy and Hope, the only thing I disagree is that we've worked to keep it a secret. And you see Arthur Schlesinger, Jr., writing way back in 1947, says, yes, this is the hidden policy of America. But we can't tell the American public because they're too unsophisticated to see the value.
What is the instrumentality of world government? What is the instrumentality?
Of all the things you say about Arthur Schlesinger, that's the silliest statement I ever heard. He never made anything like that.
Well, let me suggest that you read the May-June issue of the Partisan Review of 1947, Tom, and you can read it for yourself. It's called
Arthur Schlesinger said there was a conspiracy. A conspiracy to promote communism?
Oh, no, he didn't use the word conspiracy. He said the objective was to bring about... Well, let me finish. I'll tell you. He said that the objective, the secret policy, which we can't tell the American public because they're not sophisticated enough to see the value, is that through a steady result of the erosion of new deals, we bring the American society steadily to the left.
All right.
And through a fine concept of benign containment, we merge...
The plan to promote an American greatness, imperialistic foreign policy, was now a distinct possibility. Iraq offered a great opportunity to prove their long-held theories. This opportunity was a consequence of the 9/11 disaster. The money and views of Rupert Murdoch also played a key role in promoting the neocon views, as well as rallying support by the general population through his News Corporation, which owns Fox News Network, the New York Post, and Weekly Standard. This powerful and influential media empire did more to galvanize public support for the Iraqi invasion than one might imagine.
This facilitated the Rumsfeld-Cheney policy as their plans to attack Iraq came to fruition. It would have been difficult for the neocons to usurp foreign policy for restraints of Colin Powell's State Department without the successful agitation of the Rupert Murdoch Empire. Max Boot was satisfied as he explained, quote, neoconservatives believe in using American might to promote American ideals abroad, close quote. This attitude is a far cry from the advice of the founders who advocated no entangling alliances and neutrality as the proper goal of American foreign policy. Let there be no doubt, those in the neocon camp had been anxious to go to war against Iraq for a decade. They justified the use of force to accomplish their goals even if it required preemptive war. If anyone doubts this assertion, they need only read of their strategy in A Clean Break, a new strategy for securing the realm. Although they felt morally justified in changing the government in Iraq, they knew that public support was important and justification had to be given to pursue the war. Of course, a threat to us had to exist before the people and the Congress would go along with war. The majority of Americans became convinced of this threat, which in actuality never really existed. Now we have the ongoing debate over the location of weapons of mass destruction. Where was the danger? Was all this killing and spending necessary? How long will this nation building and dying go on? When will we become more concerned about the needs of our own citizens than the problems we sought in Iraq and Afghanistan? Who knows where we'll go next? Iran, Syria, North Korea. At the end of the Cold War, the neoconservatives realized a rearrangement of the world was occurring in that our superior economic and military power offered them a perfect opportunity to control the process of remaking the Middle East. It was recognized that a new era was upon us, and the neocons welcomed Francis Fukuyama's end of history declaration. To them, the debate was over. The West won, the Soviets lost, old-fashioned communism was dead. Long live the new era of neoconservatism. The struggle may not be over, but the West won the intellectual fight, they reason. The only problem is that the neocons decided to define the philosophy of the victors. They have been amazingly successful in their efforts to control the debate over what Western values are and by what methods they will be spread throughout the world. Communism surely lost a lot with the breakup of the Soviet Empire, but this can hardly be declared a victory for American liberty as the founders understood it. Neoconservatism is not the philosophy of free markets and a wise foreign policy. Instead, it represents big government welfare at home and a program of using our military might to spread their version of American values throughout the world. Since neoconservatives dominate the way the U.S. government now operates, it behooves us all to understand their beliefs and goals. The breakup of the Soviet system may well have been an epic event, but to say that the views of the neocons are the unchallenged victors and that all we need to is to wait for their implementation is a capitulation to the controlling of the forces of history that many Americans are not yet ready to concede. There is surely no need to do so. There is now a recognized philosophic connection between modern-day neoconservatives and Irving Kristol, Leo Strauss, and Machiavelli. This is important in understanding that today's policies and the subsequent problems will be with us for years to come if these policies are not reversed. Not only did Leo Strauss write favorably of Machiavelli, Michael Ledeen, a current leader of the neoconservative movement, did the same in 1999 in his book with the title, Machiavelli on Modern Leadership, Why Machiavelli Iron Rules Are as Timely and Important Today 5 Centuries Ago. Ledeen is indeed an influential neocon theorist whose views get a lot of attention today in Washington. His book on Machiavelli, interestingly enough, was passed out to members of Congress attending a political strategy meeting shortly after its publication, and at just about the same time, A Clean Break was issued.
In Ledeen's most recent publication, The War Against the Terror Masters, he reiterates his beliefs he outlined in 1999. He specifically creative destruction, both within our society and abroad. Foreigners seeing America undo traditional societies may fear us, for they do not wish to be undone. Amazingly, Ledeen continues, they must attack us in order to survive, just as we must destroy them to advance our historic mission, close quote. If those words don't scare you, nothing will. If they are not a clear warning, I don't know what could be. It sounds like both sides of each disagreement in the world will be following the principles of preemptive war. The world is certainly a less safe place for it.
The United States should ask itself, in Machiavellian, not only what is the character of this regime, but first question should be, do we have a vital interest in who rules Syria? My answer to that is no. Secondly, if the incumbent government is overthrown, who comes to power in Syria? You have the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to overthrow Assad. You have Al-Qaeda, apparently, which is moving in, trying to overthrow Assad. So we've got to ask ourselves, is the devil we know preferable to the devil we don't know? But in the Syrian situation, I think the very fact that Al-Qaeda has been involved apparently in these four suicide attacks should tell us that we ought to be wary about overthrowing or participating in a movement to overthrow Assad before we know what's going to replace him.
As you said, it's very hard to tell what's going to happen to Syria if more radical forces seize power. Do you think the U.S. foreign policy might be helping terrorists indirectly?
I think the United States, American strategists would have to be fools not to see what Al-Qaeda is doing, not to ask the question, if it's good for Al-Qaeda, can it be good for us? Believe that if Iran, they believe Iran is moving toward a weapon, and if it is, they would favor military action to prevent it. There are a number of people that want a war.
But is there a vital threat coming from Iran, as you see it?
I don't know. Look, Iran is not... during the Cold War, with due respect, Soviet Union had thousands of weapons. They could have destroyed us in an afternoon, and we could have done the same thing. I was around during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was genuinely terrifying. But Iran doesn't frighten me, and I don't think it should frighten the American people. They don't have a bomb. They haven't made a decision to build one. They don't have the means to deliver one. And the Israelis have 300 atomic bombs. I mean, who presents the existential threat? And I think it would be a disaster for the world economy. And I think it would be a disaster for the world. I opposed Desert Storm back in 1991. I opposed even going in and cleaning Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait because I said, this will only be the first Arab-American war. And I was right. I mean, if you talk about Islamic wars, you had the war at Desert Storm, you had the war against Afghanistan, you got the war on Iraq, you had the war in Libya, now they're talking about Syria, now they're talking about Iran. Of what benefit has this been to the United States? When you see where we were in 1990 and where we are today and where China was in 1990 and where China is today, they haven't gone into any of these countries, haven't invaded anybody. And they're moving upward, as is Brazil and as are India. And what are we doing in all these places? I don't think you can't replicate the Middle West in the Middle East.
Yeah. Where were we in the 90s, and where were the Chinese? Or for that matter, where were the Brazilians, the Russians, the Indians, the Chinese, the South Africans, even South America? They're rising, and we're falling, and it's engineered. That's something to really think about. In that clip, you heard Congressman McDonald telling you that the globalists do, in fact, desire a one-world government, and they are using our country and our government to get it, and they think you aren't sophisticated enough to understand why this is good for you. They sound like progressives, don't they?
Yeah. The problem is there are as many Republicans, if not more, than Democrats that buy into this. I mean, maybe even more because Democrats are by and large morons. But there are plenty of Republicans. We call them rhinos. We call them neocons. But a lot of people think that they're conservatives, and they're not. And Fox Noise is part of this control mechanism. I mean, it doesn't feel right because it says it's fair and balanced. It says it's conservative. It certainly sounds conservative compared to MSN, LSD, CNN, and the networks, right? And they have Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, and they got Judge Napolitano on there, and they do bring up conservative issues that no one else will bring up. So they do some of that stuff, as does Levin, as does Rush, as does Hannity, right? They speak truth. They are, in fact, often conservative. They even give libertarianism a fair shake. They got Stossel on Fox, okay? But they only do it just to gain enough credibility so that they can slip in the lies without you noticing it. I hate to break it to you, but Fox News is as much a part of the psyops emotive control mechanism as anything else. In fact, it might be worse because it is controlling those of us on the so-called right who are, in fact, conservatives, who do, in fact, believe we're employing critical thinking skills, who do think that we're trying to save the republic. But if we keep feeding on their lies, we won't be able to draw the correct conclusions and we'll end up being controlled. That's what a Hegelian dialectic is. You take the desired end and you propose it as a problem, and then you propose the opposite as the solution, when in fact both of them lead to the same conclusion, which is the synthesis, which is the desired end in the first place. And there is no question about it. This isn't, you know, lunatic fringe alien conspiracy theory Illuminati nonsense. This is industrialists, financiers, transnational capitalists, corporatists, whatever you want to call them. These are people with money and power who do in fact desire a one-world government. They want to break the world up into large economic blocks of slaves and then basically rule it. You heard it in the beginning of that clip from Chapter 3 of Orwell's 1984 about the war between Oceania and East Asia and Eurasia and how it works, and that's what they're doing. What do you think they're erasing our southern border for? Remember, this started back in NAFTA. Remember when Ross Perot told you, the giant sucking sound south, right? They NAFTA, and then, you know, they started with a trade agreement, and then erasing the border, and then, you know, then you got this move towards the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the North American Union. The idea is to turn us into an economic bloc, turn the South into an economic bloc, turn the Middle East into an economic bloc. That's why they're redrawing the lines in the Middle East. Okay? This is actually happening. And we further along by buying into the lies. It is disgusting. You need to shake it off. They are destroying our country. They're being aggressive militarily overseas with preemptive strikes in order to provoke people like, or build people like ISIS, so that we will be forced to end up fighting this war on their behalf to end up being controlled by them. It's not a successful strategy if you want to be free. Chris, I'm going to turn it to you before I start cussing.
Okay, good point. And I'm glad you clarified that, because sometimes, and it's like, here's the situation. If you listen to us for 2 freaking years, then you would probably have more information behind when we throw something out, like when we beat up on Fox or whatever. If you pop on, you haven't listened to us for a long time, then you're like, oh, man, what are they beating up on Fox for? Fox is the only fair and balanced news out there. Rah, 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 rah. What's wrong with these guys? Well, then that's how you're going to think. But if you're part of the group and you've listened to the shows, then we've outlined details on how they do it and what they do. You know, there's more neocons working for Fox than any other organization out there. You know, and all these neocons are the ones that sold the Iraq war. They're the ones that allowed Libya to be bombed. They're the ones that were jacking behind, you know, Saud's got to go. They're the ones, you know, 24/7, you know, Putin is Hitler, Putin is evil, Putin's a bully, Putin's this, Putin's that, Putin's this, Putin's that. And you know, that ain't fair and balanced. You know, I studied Russia and the Ukraine. You know, it's all bullshit. And it's all for an agenda. These people are part of the neocon structure of a globalist, you know, American new century, which really is not even really Americans behind it. That's what's scary. You know, these people, you know, whether it's Bolton or any of these guys, McCain, you know, they're just puppets. You know, they're just, you know, the familia, you know, which was, if you ever saw the movie Blade, the wannabe vampires, you know, that work for the vampires. I mean, it's just about that freaking sick. And they are destroying our country. They are ready to get us into the next war. They're going to push to bomb Syria. They still got to get rid of Assad. And you go, why? He's an evil dictator. Oh, come on. Do some freaking research. I think I had, I don't know, 5,000 different posts and comments and you know, mini-series and articles and, you know, people from that part of the country and, you know, on just on Syria when it happened. And, you know, when that was going on. And if you do the research, you're like, well, what the hell? He was the only guy in the Middle East that basically gave the Christians refuge when we blew the shit out of Iraq based on lies. I mean, there's got to come a point in time where you take responsibility for your own freaking brain and quit being a sheep for these globalists, because that's what they are. They don't care about America. They don't care about American sovereignty. You know, and day by day, minute by minute, they just gradually murk the water up a little more and moderate it a little more and until the next thing you know, you're accepting this and then you're accepting that. Then you voted for Romney and then, you know, and that's how this crap happens, because it sounds good and they sound like they're on your side because they have just enough people on there that are probably pretty damn sincere, you know, about their beliefs and things like that. And, you know, whether you said Napolitano or libertarians or whatever, you know. But the thing is that is it getting better under their watch? They just tried to sell you on the war against Russia. Not one of those bastards covered the other side of the story. Not one of them. And you tell me, oh, you guys are rough on Fox. Yeah. Because I have a brain, because I've done the research, and I know what's going on globally, because I've taken the time to do the research and figure out who is Russia, who is China, who is India, who is Brazil, what is BRICS, what's really going on in Syria, what's really going on in Iraq, why are we funding terrorists? Have you noticed, I mean, think about this for a second, have you noticed that if you cared, okay, if you really were a conservative America First news station, why aren't we talking about Afghanistan? Is anybody, I mean, here's just a question for you. How many people even bothered to read the article or even knew there was an article out there saying that half the freaking weapons we sent to Afghanistan are missing? Oh, isn't that funny how that happens? You know, why aren't they running with stories? If they wanted to destroy, honestly, seriously, think about this. If they really wanted to destroy the Obama administration, all they have to do is expose 24/7 like the leftist media did against George Bush, 24/7 on the wars, 24/7, and expose all the truth behind funding and training these so-called moderate rebels which built the ISIS army. If that was a George W. Bush in there right now, 24/7 the truth about this would be in the media. Why isn't it in Fox News 24/7? Why? Because it's full of neocons who are all behind this shit, who all want this shit, who are still part of that old 7 countries in 5 year plan, who are still part of that new American century, you know, Billy Crystal and the rest of them, you know, this concept of no country can rise up and we will have to destroy them, i.e. Russia, i.e. China. You hear nothing about what's going on in China. There's a trade war going on. Why? Why is there a trade war going on? China and America are big trading partners. Because China quit buying our debt, and that's the only way we could afford to buy their cheap shit so you as Americans could buy cheap stuff. And one of the best analogies that I heard on this was if the U.S. reserve currency folds, which, not if, when it folds, okay, Walmart will be like Lehman Marcus. Because the only reason that we can buy that cheap shit from China is because they buy our debt. Well, they quit buying our debt last year. I have no idea what we're paying the bill with, you know. And China's, if you do the research and you study, I mean, how many people know who the hell the president of China is right now? Every 3 days I read an article about him leaving another country over a $10 billion deal or a $20 billion deal or a $10 billion loan for infrastructure development so that they can, you know, bring their ships in and trade or an investment into a country, into infrastructure. Every 3 to 4 days, this guy, you know, I don't think he's been in China since he was elected. He's been all over the world cutting deals, lending money, investing in infrastructure in countries, doing what America used to do before we decided that we were going to sanction and bomb the shit out of everybody. You know, trade. You know, the communist country, trade. And the capitalist country, bomb. Something's broken there. You know, I mean, something's just like totally backwards here. I mean, people don't even understand what's going on around the world. But you got to figure, we do about $500 million, $600 billion a year of trade with China, buying their shit. It's a trade imbalance every year. China's sitting on about $4.5 trillion of U.S. dollars in bad debt and U.S. bonds, okay, that they can't do anything with. So they're spreading it all over the world, cutting these deals. And I guarantee you, once they're done cutting all these deals, they'll exit the U.S. dollar, dump our freaking debt, crash our system, and it's over. I'm serious. I absolutely see this like I'm going, wow. You know, I mean, I don't think they want to, but I think it's called survival because they know after we destroy Russia, which ain't going to happen, but, you know, that they're next on the list. Why? Because they're developing into a superpower. Economically, you know, it's really funny because people say, oh, in 5 years, in 10 years, you know, China's going to be, you know, bigger than our economy. It already is. You don't even know the economic figures coming out of China because they don't have the same kind of market information system that we do. And if you look at purchasing power, they blow us away. Americans, the only reason we have purchasing power is we live on debt. In China, they put 30 to 40% of their income away. 30 to 40% of their income away in savings and investments. And their citizens buy gold and silver, and they're encouraged to by their government. What do? We argue over whether we should buy gold or not. And then we go out and get another credit card and go to freaking Walmart and buy cheap shit. Our whole economy is based on debt. Our whole economic system is based on debt. And the only reason that we can keep this system going is our military might, which is crumbling. It's spread all over the world. People are tired of getting threatened. You now have rising powers. I was just going to post something for you to read, but I just saw a new article that came out that Russia and Kazakhstan and, you know, all the Stan countries in China are all doing this massive military exercise in Central Asia. Why? Because that's where they're going to build the Silk Road. That's where China and Russia have had this vision for years, because if you look in history and you go back a long ways, you know, what made China great was the Silk Roads, and there were several of them, but, you know, through Central Asia all the way through Turkey into Europe was a big one. And that's what their vision is, and they've been investing tens of billions of dollars in these countries across the world. And then you got Russia on the other side, who has the influence of all these stand, you know, former Soviet states, and the CIS, or the Eurasian Union, that they developed, you know. And that's one of the biggest reasons, people don't know this, but that's one of the biggest reasons Ukraine was toppled, you know, and the government was toppled, and they formed a revolution because Ukraine was part of that vision to form that Eurasian Union that, you know, Putin talked about 14 years ago in his acceptance speech, you know, of building, because it's just as untapped land, resources, and people, and a gateway across, you know, that whole, you know, from China, from the West Coast to the East Coast. It's really what it's about. Or from the Pacific to the Atlantic. It's actually East to West. It depends how you look at it. But, you know, this is big stuff. And it's trillion-dollar potential business. And it's all being done without the U.S. And so the U.S. is trying to figure out how in the hell they can get their fingers in the pie. And with China and Russia moving away from the U.S. dollar, Well, what else do you got? What else is in our toolbox? What do we got? Let's see. We got we put you in debt, we tie you to our banking system, or we blow you up. There's our tools. I don't know if we even know what trade is anymore. You know? So bottom line is they're freaking the hell out, because if the U.S. reserve currency fails, then the whole empire cannot afford to be kept up, because it's kept up on debt. And if nobody around the world's buying our debt anymore, then how in the hell are we going to have this empire around the freaking world? How in the hell are we going to afford to spend tens of billions of dollars all over the world, hundreds of billions of dollars all over the world, manipulating other countries and governments when we can't finance it through our debt anymore? This is the empire that these a-holes like McCain and the rest of these neocons and this new American century vision and all this, this is what these people fear they're losing. They're losing their power. None of it's good for you. I mean, can you honestly tell me? I mean, you think about this. Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya, and what we're and just those three. Okay, forget Libya for a second. Afghanistan and Iraq. It's destroyed our economy. Destroyed it. We're over $17 trillion in debt, $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. We've had a flat line. We have had no recovery. The only reason we haven't crashed is because the Federal Reserve has printed almost $5 trillion and dumped it into our economy. And the only way they can do that and keep that illusion going and make you think that the economy is okay is they sell our debt all over the world. Because what we do is countries make shit in other countries who have a lower standard of living, so they make stuff, and then we buy it from them, and then they have to take that money and buy our U.S. Treasury debt. It's the same thing with the petrodollar in 71 when Nixon took us off the gold standard with Saudi Arabia. You know, Saudi was a signed deal that said, first of all, they had to raise the price of oil, so they had to do some manipulation in the world market to cause oil to go way up. And then that allowed them to buy oil from Saudi. Then Saudi would reinvest that money into treasury bonds, and then they could keep the Ponzi scheme going. And then we just kind of spread that Ponzi scheme all over the world in every deal we did. Well, that Ponzi scheme is at the end. And the power that goes with it is at the end. And here's the sickest, saddest part about this whole thing, Rex, is people get in arguments over this shit, and they get all upset when you talk about America this way, but you don't understand. This isn't your country doing this to you. Are you sick of paying the taxes you pay? Are you sick of the government? I mean, what's Congress has what, a 12% approval rating, maybe? So you're all mad at them because they don't fix
somewhere north of paramecium.
Yeah, well, and people, you're all pissed off at government, and then you turn around and vote the same people right back in. That's what happened in 2014. And I'm like going, what, are people stupid? And then you get a comment saying, oh, you guys are tough on Fox News. And I'm thinking, Fox News is part of this. Their whole, if you watch them long enough, you'll realize they are perpetuating this global agenda and war. That's all they do. And they just have enough people on there to make you come on and go, yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody posted an article of Judge Jeanine, you know, getting upset at Obama over this reporter had his head cut off, right? And immediately below that, because I'm an informed citizen, I'm like going, did she talk about those 9 reporters that were killed in the Ukraine? Or just that one? Because there's an agenda tied to that. That's where when you say the Hegelian dialectic is why we say what we say about Fox.
Yep.
That's why.
And it's such a,
and if that upsets people, what?
It's not just one comment. We get lots of comments about us beating up on America, on Fox News, and on the Republican Party, because that's the wagon people have hitched their horse to, and they don't see any other option. The fact is that these wagons are pulling you in the wrong direction.
We had a dozen options in the primary, and they didn't win because people didn't get behind them. I don't understand that mindset, Rex. That's why we're where we're at. That's why the Republican power is a Republican Party has the power it has, and it's why they're continually milking down the principles of the party. It's why you have McCain's and McConnell and and Boehner. Come on, that represents you, and if you're holding on in fear,
oh my God, we've gotta get the Senate back. Oh my God, it's gotta be Republicans. They're no difference. You cannot be honest. If you look at the last 5.5 years of the GOP, the leadership in the GOP, they have handed Obama everything he's asked for, except for the handful of things where the conservatives in the House refuse to allow it to come to the floor, going, we won't vote for it. All the important things, audit the Fed, the NSA, come on, the NSA, who were the biggest loudmouths telling you should shut up and sit down and accept this because it's part of keeping you safe? That was Republicans, outside of a couple of them. Who voted to raise the debt ceiling? Who was behind, who was the biggest loudmouth trying to get us to blow up frickin' Syria and get rid of Assad? Republicans. Who are the biggest big mouths right now trying to get us back into Iraq? Republicans. Are you people pickled? Is your brain pickled? Do you live in so much fear in your life that you're going to hold on to this concept of we got to get behind the R because the D is so evil? There is no difference. They have the same agenda. It doesn't matter. You got R's in, Bush era, 5 debt ceiling increases, trillions of dollars spent on an endless war, increase the Department of Education. You don't like Common Core? Talk to Bush. I mean, there's got to be a point you wake up. You know, and I don't know. You know, I personally don't give a crap. I know what I know, and I know what I believe, and I know the research I've done, and my worldview, and my view of my country. These people in Washington, D.C. do not give a shit about the country I love and grew up in. And if I got an opinion about this stuff, that doesn't mean I'm anti-American. I'm anti-bullshit. And I'm tired of these people destroying my country and then telling me I should bend over and vote them right back into office because that's the only option you got. What kind of fool's errand is that? Why do you think we're where we're at in this country? You go back and you listen to Eisenhower talking about the Industrial War Complex. You know, our empire is about $1.5 trillion a year. How would you like that money spent in this country fixing our problems? You don't even have a vote on this shit. And most of that empire concept is really the Republican Party now. It used to be freaking the Dems and the commies. And they took over the Republicans because they figured they could gin up conservatives and Christians and go kill people easier than they could the liberal left. Isn't that a tough one to swallow? That's a tough one to swallow, but until you figure it out, because really the neocons comes out of the commie leftist mindset. And yet they found through the 60s when everybody went love and anti-war, they had to find a new party where they could find people they could rile up and get to war quicker. Red-blooded conservative Christian Americans, rah, we got to go blow them up. You bet, kill them women and children to save those women and children. Yeah, I'm an American. You got to be freaking kidding me. What a sell job, Rex. Back to you.
Yeah, it's a pretty good sell job. And look, it's emotionally devastating. Okay, and that's why it's hard to accept it. You gotta get control of your emotions. It is emotionally devastating to realize that what you thought was being done in the name of your country, your principles, your liberty, your goodness, is a lie. It hurts. It hurts. And it feels wrong, and it feels like it can't be true. All right, but that's where we are. We've gotten way past the tipping point. And Chris and I have been doing this show now for, I don't know, two and a half years or so. And leading up to that convention in Tampa, you know, we tried. It seemed that that was the moment. It was the moment where the Constitution, where liberty was going to rise up, and they stole it. They stole it, and you realize it's been like that for a long time, but you were holding on to that hope that people will wake up and reclaim what is theirs. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. And it's because so many of us are stuck in this mindset that somehow our side is going to make it better. We don't have a side on the national stage.
There's their side only. And they give you this show to make you think that there's choice. They give you this show to make you think that there's free press. They give you this show to make you think that somehow the Bill of Rights and the Constitution are still in play. They are not. Does that mean that you roll over and accept your brave new world? Maybe. Maybe that's what you want to do. If you're listening to the show, I really doubt it. I'm not rolling over. Like I told you in the beginning, only the brave will either see liberty or death. The rest of them will be dead, but they'll be walking dead. They'll be zombies. So what you have to do is come to grips with it. And honestly, there's no way to do that. There is no humanly possible way to do that. It requires something far higher and far deeper. And, you know, you got to find it yourself. But for you agnostics and atheists out there, I suggest you start thinking real deeply about this. Because in order to overcome this mind psychosis that we are all subject to one degree or another, you need to have something stronger. And what I mean by that is some of us who are awake, who understand the problems, flip the switch and go into the whole, you know, alien conspiracy realm of solutions, which isn't practical. You've got to be real. You've got to understand reality. You have to make sense of this. And the festering militarism is the most effective means of controlling you. War is the most powerful tool of control that there is. That's just a fact. That's why you have perpetual war, like in Orwell's book 1984. Now, sometimes these wars are hot shooting wars, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're wars against the weather, or wars against poverty, or wars against drugs, okay? And I'm not saying that the stated intention isn't correct, but it is just that. It's a stated intention to get you behind it, and then the mechanism is to control. That's what Ferguson is about. That's what they used Foley for. And by the way, they don't care who they sacrifice. Women, children, innocents, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to understand, these people are psychopaths. Some are sociopaths, but the real heavy-duty ones in charge are psychopaths. They don't think like you. They have killed their conscience. They have none. There's no qualms about doing what we define as evil. They have no qualms about it. You might get a little uncomfortable. Your heart might race if you're lying. You might get a little uncomfortable if there's a physical confrontation with somebody else. They don't have these problems. For them, it's just an effective use of a tool. And they look at human beings as tools, nothing more, expendable tools. It's frightening, but that's the reality of it. And you've got to accept it, because if you don't accept it, you can't do anything about it. Now, just so that we're clear, we're not sitting here talking about some kind of crazy stuff. This isn't lunatic fringe stuff. This is real. America, as envisioned by our founding fathers, as envisioned in our hearts by most of us, is a grand and noble thing. It's beautiful. But that's not where we live right now. We have been appropriated by psychopaths. You got to come to grips with that and realize that war, as unfortunate as it is going to happen. Now, we all have a requirement to try to avoid it, right? But you can't avoid it at all costs, because sometimes the costs of avoiding war are greater than going into a war. But you have to have some measure by which that makes sense. And there's something that's been around for thousands of, well, not thousands, but a couple of thousand years in Western civilization, in Christendom, which is where we inherited our notion of liberty from. It's called the Just War Doctrine. And it says that before you engage into war, you have to look at four criteria. The damage inflicted by the aggressor on the nation or community of nations must be lasting, grave, and certain. All other means of putting an end to it must have been shown to be impractical or ineffective. And there must be a serious prospect of success. And the use of arms and violence must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. So These are the things by which we have to measure if the course of action makes sense, if it is warranting war. And they're pushing us into a situation where we're not going to have a choice. They're pushing Russia and China into a situation where they won't have a choice. What do you think is going on in Ukraine? They are baiting, begging Putin to take that first step, even though toppling the government of Ukraine and setting up a, you know, Nazi pseudo, you know, captured interest over there is that. But publicly, you're going to push Putin to a point where he's going to have to take action. That's their plan. That's stupid. All right, now, is Putin our friend? I don't know. Is he our enemy? Shouldn't be. Can he be our ally? Perhaps. I mean, we were allies with Stalin, for God's sake. You want to tell me that Putin's worse than Stalin? Give me a break. All right? So just because somebody isn't our friend doesn't mean that they have to be our enemy. Just because somebody isn't our ally doesn't mean that we have to destroy them. Putin and Assad, like them, don't like them, thugs, not thugs, I don't care. Assad is doing what's good for Syria. Putin is doing what's good for Russia. And frankly, those two have been more effective at killing ISIS than we have. In fact, we've done the opposite. Israel and the United States have actually created ISIS. That's a serious problem. I don't like being on the wrong side of the equation. These ISIS psychos need to be put down, but we're helping them. That's crazy. These are the things that you have to think about. And we're about to run out of time in the next 7 minutes. If you're listening to the show live, your browser will cut you off. You will not be able to continue listening in your browser. So if you're listening live now, and a bunch of you are, and you want to continue hearing the rest of the show, we'll try to wrap this up in the next 40 minutes or so. You have to call in and listen on your handset. That's the only way you can listen live. 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. If you're listening in podcast or in archive on the Internet, just keep rolling. It'll play till the end. And remember, any of the shows, including this one, are available for you anytime. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/libertysthunder, scroll down, find the title, click on it. It plays right in your browser. I think you have to listen to a 30-second commercial or something like that, and then it just plays. And the clips that we put in here give you the source data, and then we comment on it. You can go back and play the relevant parts and mark them and all that good stuff. And communicate with us on our Facebook page. That's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. And make sure you get into Chris's group. That's Liberty's Talk on Facebook. I got another clip that I'm going to try to get to before we hit the top of the hour. You need to pay attention to what's going on because this plays out in multiple facets. And part of it is the electoral process. Corrupt and screwed up and broken as it might be, it is a tool that you have, a broken tool that hardly works. You've got to fix it. But in the meantime, you at least have to make sure it doesn't break anymore. And you got to pay attention, all right, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And I'm going to play a little clip for you right now that puts some of this stuff in context and brings it home. We're almost at the end of the primaries here. And frankly, I mean, what the hell did you do? All this work, all the Tea Party rising up, the Liberty Movement, all the taking our country back and all this stuff.
Failed.
And the only thing you managed to pull off was Ben Sasse. I mean, that's the best you could do, one thing, Ben Sasse. That's your golden quill. I mean, give me a break. The guy's barely a conservative, and he's the only one you got. I'll comment on that in a second, but let's get to this clip. Chris, this is a it's a clip that's going to take us through the top of the hour. So if you want to continue listening to the rest of the clip and our commentary afterwards, you have to call in now, 646-649-1013. I won't be bringing anybody on live, but you can hear it in your handset, 646-649-1013.
We've got military tribunals. We've got Gitmo. We're bombing Libya. People who voted for Obama got 4 more years of Bush.
Yeah, what's the joke? They told me if I voted for McCain, we'd be going to war in a third Muslim country.
Yeah.
I voted for McCain, and we're doing it.
There you go.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And I got to give you some straight talk, my friends. It's a tough war we're in. It's not going to be over right away. There's going to be other wars. I'm sorry to tell you, there's going to be other wars. We will never surrender, but there will be other wars. And right now, we're going to have a lot of PTSD to treat, my friends. We're going to have a lot of combat wounds that have to do with these terrible explosive IEDs that inflict such severe wounds.
And my friends, it's going to be tough, and we're going to have a lot to do.
I would be rushing equipment to Erbil. I would be launching airstrikes not only in Iraq but in Syria.
There's at least one senator up there. If he had his way, we'd be in 15 countries right now, in 15 different civil wars. I think the American people want to defend the country but aren't overly eager to get involved in war. And so I don't see it so much as a conundrum as maybe it's a new face of where the Republican Party could be, but it's also where the vast majority of Americans are. If you're a Republican, you want to attach yourself to the legacy of Reagan. But for those who say, oh, I can't attach myself to the legacy of Reagan, I was there when I was 13 years old in 1976 when my family was my dad was one of four congressmen to support Reagan early on. So for those who want to grab the Reagan mantle and say, oh, he would have been a neocon, he was actually somewhat circumspect. He was very strong defense. He was sometimes bellicose in telling our enemies where do they need to do and what they needed to do. But he also negotiated with the Soviets. And I think it's important that you can be strong, and the stronger you are, the more you can negotiate with people. And so I am for discussions with the Russians, with the Chinese, to try to control places like Iran or control places like North Korea. I think both the Russians and the Chinese can be a part of that solution. Now, when I say that, some conservatives are like, oh, you trust the Russians, you trust the Chinese. No, diplomacy isn't about always trusting people, but we had a dialogue with the Russians for 70 years when we didn't trust them most of the time, but we still had a dialogue, and I think most would conclude, you know, it's a lot better to not have had a nuclear war than it would have been
certainly
to have a nuclear war.
I have one question I can't let you get away without asking, because Hillary Clinton has said that you are her favorite Republican. And I just want to ask you, is she your favorite Democrat?
Actually, I hope this program is blacked out in Arizona. Please cut. No. look, I respect Secretary Senator Clinton. I respect her views. We have had disagreements on a number of issues. I think it's my job to work with every president if she is, regrettably, if she attains the presidency. I worked with her in the Senate. I just worked with Senator Sanders on a Veterans Affairs bill. We've got to fix the VA. How do you do that? You've got to reach across the aisle and work together on certain issues. And I'm not only not embarrassed about that, I'm proud of it, and I respect Hillary Clinton.
My concern is that right now no presidential contender in the Republican Party is talking seriously about national defense. We have people like Rand Paul, whose main concern seems to be that some guy sitting at a Starbucks drinking coffee is going to get killed by a CIA drone. I mean, we're becoming isolationist, and we should be the party of Eisenhower and Reagan and be strong on national defense.
So let's talk about the rest of the field, because you mentioned Senator Paul as someone that you couldn't imagine supporting,
right,
for sure. Some of the other folks that have been out there a lot, Ted Cruz traveling, he's in Iowa even this weekend. What do you think of him and what he's done on defense?
No, I'm not a big fan of Ted Cruz. I think that he, again, is too much of an isolationist and has too negative a view. Bad image for the party and bad policy.
So you know a little bit about what the Democratic field may look like in 2016. Hillary Clinton, clearly the Democratic front runner. A lot of folks think it's hers if she wants it. Where do you view her from her time as senator, her time as Secretary of State on the issues that matter to you?
Yeah, I know Hillary Clinton very well. Work very closely with her. I think she's very strong on foreign policy, and I think that if we nominate somebody from our isolationist wing of the party, she'll destroy them. We need someone who can stand up to her and debate foreign policy in an intelligent, coherent way, not name-calling and not
No, I think you're looking at substance rather than whether it's an R or D after his name. Manifestly, if he's our candidate, then Hillary's going to be our girl, Sean, because she's more conservative than he is. I think she would be stronger on the war on terrorism.
You really
I absolutely believe that.
That's the one area I disagree with.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, we're going to sign up together, but let me explain that point on terrorism. We're going to be together.
You would vote for Hillary?
They're very friendly, to commiserate with her, you know, about the injustice.
He's whipping the door.
No, and don't you think, incidentally, I was thinking, what woman could McCain put on the ticket to really appeal to the Clinton voters? What about Hillary? I think McCain-Hillary. McCain-Hillary.
Lieberman.
All right, Hillary is more hawkish than any of us. Right. She's comparing Putin and the Russians to Nazis.
No, I mean, Hillary is the neocon.
I didn't think
it's going to be fascinating if she decides to run and she gets the nomination. that she will be more of a saber-rattler and more of a neocon than probably the Republican nominee. Is that not the case? I mean, there's hardly been a military engagement that Hillary hasn't been in the past 20 years.
I think she is a traditional Democrat who is tends to be very tough on foreign policy. You know, we've forgotten that in the Vietnam and post-Vietnam era, but that was where the Democratic Party always was. Yeah. And if you get a Republican like Rand Paul as the nominee, she'll certainly be more out there on military might.
Yes, we came. We saw. He died. He didn't have anything to do with your visit.
No. I'm sure it did. It's a transformational election in our country. Let the Democrats put forward a war hawk like Hillary Clinton, and you'll see a transformation like you've never seen.
Get ready, brace yourself, because we'll be raising hell.
Okay, first thing I want to cover is this isolationist bullshit, and I'm going to be very calm, talk to people like they don't know what I know and don't study the things I study. There's one thing, and if you go back to the last show, or you go back earlier, what I was saying about the BRICS nations or all the countries that are starting to move away from the U.S. and the U.S. dollar. Okay, let me tell you who the isolationists are. They're the people like McCain and Clinton and King and the rest of them who can't wait to blow up another frickin' country, who can't wait to sanction another country, who can't wait to topple through their NGOs another government, you know, legitimate government that isn't doing what we want them to do. Because what this policy, and I don't know how anybody could call this foreign policy because it's a fool's errand, this policy has done is isolated America from the world and created a lot of enemies. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, I mean, terrorists are bad guys, and there has to be something done. But the first thing you got to do is quit funding them. You know, we can argue all day long about should we go into this country, should we bomb that, should we do this. Well, if you quit making them and funding them and giving them money and weapons and training, then they would be less of a problem. And then we could have another conversation about that after you quit funding the bastards. My God, how can we live in this country with the information that's at our fingertips and American citizens not get this? It's all over. You know, I mean, it's all over the place. You can do very little work to get the research on it. So that aside. But first of all, this is your Hegelian dialectic that you talk about. This concept of trying to pin, okay, first of all, Cruz is more of a hawk than Rand is. All right, so that was kind of a misnomer anyway. But when you call somebody like Rand Paul, who can articulate Reagan's position like nobody else can, because the rest of them are lying their asses off. All right. Reagan was not a war hawk. Reagan knew that he sat in a chair that faced the possibility of nuclear war and faced a very powerful enemy. And he worked with people around the world, and he was careful about coming across with this jaw flapping bully, mine is bigger than yours mindset, that these people, these are supposed to be adults that we keep electing into power, you know, they sound like a bunch of schoolyard bullies. You know, my dad's bigger than your dad. Wow, we're badass. Yeah, you know, and Obama, you know, Russia's a failing state and nobody wants to go there, and they die at 60 and they don't make anything. And I'm like, they're a $3 trillion economy. They must make something, stupid. You know, I mean, it's just, I've never seen such a bunch of unprofessional jerks in my life in politics than that stuff that I just heard on that clip. These are people you elect to dictate policy and represent our country around the world. Now, back to what I said. Isolationism occurs two ways. One is you go home and close your doors, you don't let anybody in, and you don't deal with anybody in the world. That's what they're trying to say a Rand Paul is. bullshit. The other isolationist is the one that's so busy sticking their finger in everybody else's eye that one day you wake up and those 100 nations that used to be part of your sphere of influence hate your frickin' guts, and now they're looking for somebody else, a large country that's powerful, has big military and nukes, to get behind, i.e. Russia, China, India. That's what's happening in the world. Your so-called non-isolationists, your interventionists, your first strike group, you know, that have given us all these wars and this tremendous debt that we have and collapsed our whole economy and our way of life in America, have destroyed, and it ain't Obama. Yeah, Obama's accentuated, you know, accelerated the problem, but they destroyed our standing in the world. Nobody trusts us anymore. You know, they, I mean, countries, France, I mean, that's a major ally, right? Been there with every war we've ever been in. And they got up the other day and they said, that's it. We're sick of this. We need to get away from the U.S. dollar. A country of, you know, France. And this is happening to the tune. I mean, and I'm going to put this together because I really want to read the list of all the countries that have moved away from U.S. influence as fast as possible, and it's accelerating. And I just have not put a list together, but I just get bits and pieces of it in articles and videos and interviews and things like that. And I'm thinking, holy crap, this is serious stuff. And nobody, including, i.e., Fox News, talks about this because they're sounding just like King and McCain on this whole concept of we got to interfere, we got to bomb, we got to interfere, we got to show strength, we got to be badasses. Well, that's why we're where we're at. You know, that's exactly why we're where we're at. And their attitude in terms of how they're pressuring, whether it be Russia or interfering in Ukraine, or again talking about, you know, we got to bomb Syria to get these bad guys that we made, you know, they're doing it more. They're pushing countries away from us as fast as they can flee. Now, in the past, for a long time, there was no other world power that could stand up to the United States economically or militarily, and so people had nowhere to go. They just basically bent over and took it. Every time the U.S. State Department came in and said, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to have this company is going to do that, and that you're going to privatize your water, and you're going to let GMOs in, and oh, by the way, this is what your cabinet's going to be made up, and these are CIA officers that you're going to have in your country. And what could people do? Nothing, because we had the military and we had the economics. And now we don't. And China and Russia and the rest of the BRICS nations are big enough, strong enough, economically strong enough. They've been the only growing markets while we've been flatlined, even though the whole world's slowing down a little bit right now. But they've been, you know, China slowed down. Oh, my God, it's only 8%. I wish we could be 3%. It would be a miracle right now. So here we have this situation where everything they're telling you is a lie. Everything. And this whole dialogue and rhetoric is designed to get you focused on what they want to do anyway, which is invade Iraq again and split these countries up. And if you do the damn research and you study it, you realize this was a plan a long time ago. There was a group of people who wanted to split it all up. You got the Sunnis and the Shias, and then you got the Kurds. And there's oil and resources in each one of those countries. So there's people who've had this has been part of a big plan for a long time. Then you got Israel's plan. You know, so you got all this stuff going on, and what you think is, oh, my God, there's these bad guys, and we got to do something, which is exactly in that first clip. You know, people scream. They see enough, and they go, oh, my God, somebody has to do something. Well, they're doing shit all the time. They're making this stuff happen so they can ultimately get you to back it, because if they don't have the people behind it, it won't sustain it long term. And so that's what it is. So anyway, the isolationist situation. It's bullshit. You know, our foreign policy has got us to where we're at in this country, including our economic problems. And that's a reality. If we don't get somebody in there that has the ability to step back and say we need sanity and we need to have some compromise and some dialogue with countries who threaten us, you know what I mean, and or potentially could be a problem, and sit down and say, what are we as a country going to do to embrace a changing world that we no longer control as much as these control freak psychopaths think we do, because we don't anymore. And then you have to ask yourself, you know, bottom line, as an American, is nuclear war okay with you? I mean, is that okay? Because you're poking the eye of some pretty damn powerful countries with some big – China has more people in their military than we got in our country. And they have nukes. And their military is growing by leaps and bounds because they don't have the corruption in their defense departments that we have, and they actually build shit that works. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me how little people understand about the power shifts that have occurred in this kind of, in this world. So there's the reality. You want nuclear war? Then keep buying into this shit, because the people who run our country are just about that freaking insane, because they're talking the same shit that Bush talked, that Clinton talked, the same crap. They want to run right up to the gateway of Russia, and they want to push it right over the edge. You know, we actually have a doctrine in some of our world, you know, conflict analogies of the potential of surviving a first strike. And it's the dust has been blown off that document. And they got us sitting on a table looking at it going, you know, we could survive a first strike because we're over here and they're over there and we're like pushed right up against their borders. And I'm like going, are you freaking people insane? And the fact that they're even discussing it means they are insane. So we need some sanity in this country, and the only way it's going to happen is when people wake up and quit buying into the fear and actually get some logic behind your thinking and some critical thinking, because if we don't, I'll tell you, and this amazes me. I didn't know who Dr. Paul was until I met you guys. And when I listen to him talk now, seeing the things I've seen and the research I've done, because most of my research is not through the Liberty Movement or through, you know, Dr. Paul's writings or whatever. Yeah, I listen to his stuff and read some of his stuff. But I went out and said, I'm going to go figure this out for myself. I'm not going to be a follower, because I've never been a follower of a person. You know, I'm not built that way. So, but there was things he said and the way he was attacked, and I was looking at my country and the debt and the wars and the bullshit and the lies and the way they were beating up on him, and I went, hey, you know, he's worth checking out because he's got a huge movement, and obviously he's got some pretty sound ideas that I do agree with, so I'm going to go figure this stuff out for myself. Foreign policy, economics, you know, freedom, individual liberty, free, you know, trade versus bombs. He was like, well, it's not a bad idea. Let's look at this stuff. And so I took the time to go figure it out for myself. And the more I look at the world and our place in it, the more I'm like, God, he was right, you know. And I wasn't a Paul supporter, you know. I wasn't out beating the street for Ron Paul, you know. But after 40 years and the movement that he had, he was worth looking at and listening to. And that was what it was for me, was because I think, like all Americans, 9/11 was this is shock. And next thing you know, we're in this endless war on terror, and our economy crashes, and then we vote in a community organizer, Marxist communist, you know, to solve it. I'm like, China, the communist nation's kicking our ass economically, and so we put a socialist commie in power to compete against it. Oh, that was just brilliant, America. But again, Republicans gave us Romney, so, you know, the one guy could lose, so there you are again. I mean, they're all insane. And none of it, and none of what any of these people are doing, whether you talk about the border or the economy or the Fed printing money or our current $3.6 trillion budget or our $600+ billion military budget and a, you know, an F-35 that, you know, is $500 billion and they still can't get it to work, and littoral stealth crafts that don't work, and our submarines don't work, and wrenches that cost $150. Our system is broken. And Eisenhower warned us about this. You know, it's in that clip, and he warned us about this new power in this country, because we the people don't matter except for taxes, and they want your vote, right, and donate to your party, and work harder and pay more taxes, and make sure you're in fear all the time, because we're watching you. That's pretty much what we've become, and this is not going to go away. You know, who's the greatest voters and pushers of the NSA and the NDAA? Republicans. You know, I mean, how many of them are fighting it? Two or three? You know, Amash, Rand, you know, talking about liberty and the Bill of Rights and, oh, my God, you know, those basic things? I mean, this is real. You know, everything that we thought might have gone wrong in our country, you know, years ago, looking into the future, it's here now, and you think the Republicans are on your side. And I'm like going, you, who pickled your brain? Or do you live in so much fear that you refuse to look at facts to realize that right now, you know, if we don't get some liberty-minded people in Congress, which we seem to have just totally fouled up in 2014, and a liberty-minded president that has a real heart for securing our country and putting America first, instead of running around all over the frickin' world creating more enemies and blowing more shit up and destroying our economy even more, you know, we're in real trouble. So, I don't know. You know, this is that point in time, you know, at the end of a show when it's like, I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know when people are going to wake up. I don't know if they will. I don't know if it's going to have to crash first. Because the next economic downturn, the bubbles are in place and they've been pumped up bigger than any bubble we've ever had. You know? And I'm like going, we can't afford any of this shit. And those bubbles are going to pop and it's going to be a huge crash. And we're going to be spread all over the frickin' world in all this shit that we do all over the world that we can't afford anyway, that we have to print and borrow money to do anyway, you know. And all this stuff going on is all going to come to a screeching train wreck, and then we're going to be left with picking ourselves up again and brushing ourselves off and looking to the government to solve our problems again. And if you have the same creeps in there that you do now, what do you think their solution is going to be? Print more money in another war, because that's what you got running this country for the most part, not all of them. So that's my attitude on this whole thing. That's my close, Rex, back to you.
All right. Trog closing with a club. I think you hit on some very key points, and I really think people should listen to this again. In fact, listen. Listen to all our shows again, but especially the last three, including this one. Fatal mistakes, fearfully manipulated. Fatal mistakes, financial malfeasance. Fatal mistakes, festering militarism. It's one theme coming at it from different angles, and you have to really understand this. That clip, which was kind of a add-on, and we're kind of running out of time in the show. I don't want to be too heavy on clips, but I don't know if you're hearing this stuff in context anywhere else. And so we try to put it together so that you could really make sense of this and see the patterns. That clip was frightening. You heard how there's one party, the war party, and it's war at home and war abroad, and how they look at the world. And here's the crazy thing. You've got libertarians or libertarian-ish conservatives or whatever dismissing Rand Paul as a neocon. All right? That's crazy. You heard Peter King there calling Ted Cruz an isolationist. That's crazy. If you get isolationism, pacifism, and non-interventionism confused, you got a serious problem. To the neocons, everyone who isn't for preemptive war is soft, is weak, is capitulating. And to the anti-war nuts, both on the left and the right, everyone who knows war is unfortunately often necessary. Everyone's a neocon warmonger hawk. It doesn't work that way. Okay, the whole idea is to not engage in war, but be ready for war because you're going to engage in war. Now, you shouldn't do it as a preemptive act. You shouldn't do it as a hostile act. You shouldn't do it for selfish reasons other than self-preservation. You shouldn't do it for plunder. You shouldn't do it because people will be killed, and we don't want to be those people. We don't want to be the ones killed. We don't want to be the ones killing unnecessarily. Unfortunately, sometimes killing is necessary. There are bad people in the world. There are criminals in our country. We do need to have policing power. It shouldn't be a militarized police. It's supposed to be the constitutional militia of the several states. But at least if you're going to have professional cops, don't give them unconstitutional power and arm them like they're going to Fallujah. There's going to be bad people in the world. There's going to be Muslim jihadis that have been trying to kill everybody for 14 friggin' centuries, and they're not going to stop until every last one of them is dead. That's going to happen. There are going to be rogue imperialist nations. If they get a nuke, they might use it to hold people hostage. You have to be ready to use violence, unfortunately, much as we don't necessarily like it. You have to be ready to use violence to prevent an injustice. You have to, because if you just become nonviolent and pacifist, then you're perpetuating the injustices that are being done with your passivity. That's not who we are. That's not realistic. But we also aren't the ones who start wars and plunder and spread our debt and usury and inflation and decadent culture. Now you think, oh, Mario, Rex, you just completely criticized and destroyed American culture. Well, no, I'm not saying anything bad about American culture as America that we know, but it has been engineered. You heard in that clip where Ron Paul explained that these neocons realize that you have to degrade our culture so that we would become seem to be a danger to other people, and they'll want to attack us, and therefore we'll have to destroy them. It's just like you heard in the second clip where we played the chapter 3 of George Orwell's book, 1984. It is using war as a control mechanism. The festering militarism is that you have militarized cops in this country that are doing things such as, I don't know, border checks 100 miles away from any border. And in the meantime, the border is a sieve. Oh, the kids are pouring across. Give me a break. These are not kids. Yeah, there are some kids to get on TV and stuff like that, but these are dangerous people crossing the border. And even if they're not dangerous, we can't afford to bring on more people to add to our welfare rolls. We just don't have the money. But don't think for a second terrorists aren't crossing that border, and criminals are crossing that border, all right? But we're hassling Americans 100 miles inland from the border. We've got driver's license checkpoints. I mean, you haven't committed a moving violation, but they want to see your driver's license. It's just a checkpoint. This is a police state. And they're using the same tactics here that they've been applying in Fallujah, in Kabul, in Erbil, and soon, apparently, apparently we did it in Libya. Now we're going to do it in Syria. This is part and parcel of the same thing. It's flip sides of the same coin. It is using aggression and the concept of war to control a population, and we are choosing it. We are furthering it along by buying into the war propaganda, whether it's in Ferguson or Fallujah, or whether it's ISIS or criminals on your streets. That's what's going on. You have to wake up to this. And it has an economic component. The dollar is collapsing, which it had to. It had to as soon as they made this thing happen in 1913, lost the gold in 33, decoupled from any semblance of gold in 71. This is inevitable. I'm surprised it's taking this long. They could probably stretch it a little bit longer. But it has to happen. But at this point, the Fed's only option to get out of the hole they're in is to kill the dollar. Now, they might have to retool some of their plans because of BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They now have the BRICS funds and the BRICS bank, the development bank. They've got a competing infrastructure to the IMF, World Bank, Federal Reserve scheme, which is already engaged in a currency and trade war, and it's going to end up being a hot war to one degree or another, and it's probably going to escalate. Now, I'm not saying that I like what Russia and China are doing. I don't think state capitalism is the answer to what we're doing on this side of the equation with the Federal Reserve. All right? I think that that is an incorrect model. I think we want free markets. That's who we are. That's how we built this country. That's how we advance peace and liberty. And I don't think that the state capitalism model is the solution for peace and liberty. But it just might be the kick in the ass that we need here in the West to get rid of the financial manipulators that are screwing up our side of the equation. And frankly, I don't know if I was Russia or China, I don't know that I'd jump right into the whole notion of free markets, you know, right off the bat, but I would probably do what they're doing now. I would set up a competing system because I'm getting sick of being plundered by the IMF, which was specifically designed to plunder nations and destabilize them. And we're acting as bad actors. Now, when I say we, I'm not talking about us. Most of us, whether left, right, libertarian, Republican, whatever, most of us Americans don't want to be the bad guys. And we think we're the good guys. But we're an appropriated interest. That's what you have to understand. Don't think that because the guy has an R after his name that somehow he's going to be for free markets and the Constitution and the rule of law and a sensible foreign policy that keeps the enemies at bay. That's how they talk, but you also hear them slip up every now and then when they get pressed, right? Jihad Jane McCammed, R, Arizona. Lindsey Grahamnesty, R, South Carolina. Peter King, R, New York. Johnny Boehner, Mitch McConnell. These are the people that are allegedly on your side of the table, as are Hannity and Rush and O'Reilly and Neocon Hour with Brett Baer. This is allegedly the right side of the equation. These are allegedly the sensible ones. Well, they play a pretty good game, and as long as you're buying into it, then you are stuck in a false dichotomy between electing Ds and electing Rs and hoping for a different result. Princeton recently did a study that showed you that our voting and our petitions and our calls for action in the last 30 years or more haven't had a single effect on public policy. I will argue that Syria last year was one exception, and we need more of that. They don't have to listen to you. They only have to make you think that they listen to you. They only have to make you think there is hope. That is how they get you. We had these primaries. Chris and I have been talking about this since the tempest in Tampa in 2012. The only thing you got in the Senate, look, in Virginia here, we ousted Eric Cantor. That was a great victory. What happened? They moved the number three douchebag to number two slot, and then they elected Steve Scalise. Johnny Boehner's still there. I don't know how many shows Chris and I did and Tex when he was on did to try to get you to replace Rince Priebus with Mark Willis and get some real rule changes in the RNC so that we could have an open and fair election and debates. Didn't happen. Most of you don't even know the RNC meetings go on. You just show up in November and vote for the Rs. This cannot go on. The only thing in the Senate you got possibly is Ben Sasse. And the Republicans are likely to take the Senate. Whoop-de-doo! So in November, you're going to elect them. Spend the money, go to the polls, wear your buttons. And then in January, oh, look, Mitch McConnell's now the majority leader of the Senate. All's going to be awesome. He's going to be able to stop Obama for the next 2 years, and then we can have a Republican president. Everything not going to happen. They're going to play the game. They're going to make excuses. They're going to give Obama everything he wants. And let's be clear about something. The globalists and everybody else in the game, they're done with Obama. I don't think they like him very much. I think he was a disappointment. They're going to throw him away. What are they doing now? They're gearing up. The neocons, neocon, Hillary. And in case something happens there, they got Elizabeth Warren waiting in the wings. And who are you putting up? I just saw it the other day. Mini Mitt Romney and Mitt Romney were on Fox News running their mouths. Two totally discredited pricks, not a conservative bone in their bodies, and they're giving you advice so that you can get Chris Christie or Jebby Bush or some other dumb friggin' rhino who's going to toe the neocon line, get you involved in wars you don't want to be in, crash your economy, destroy your culture, and you're going to sit there and go, what happened? I thought we had won the election. You didn't win anything. Wake up. We are at war. And we might not want to be, but we are. If you're not fighting, you're dying. Wake Americans up. Make it happen. Understand that we don't have to blow up every place in the world. We have to protect ourselves. We have to rebuild our country. You have to make it happen. We'll be back next week with the last of our Fatal Mistake shows. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
You win!
Welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution of peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. Well, perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right. We cannot buy our security, our freedom from the threat of the bomb, by committing an immorality so great as saying to a billion human beings now enslaved behind the Iron Curtain, give up your dreams of freedom, because to save our own skins, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters. Alexander Hamilton said, a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master. And deserves one. Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better read than dead, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. And this is the meaning in the phrase of Barry Goldwater, peace through strength. Winston Churchill said, the destiny of man is not measured by material computations. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. And he said, there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness. We will keep in mind and remember that Barry Goldwater has faith in us. He has faith that you and I have the ability and the dignity and the right to make our own decisions and determine our own destiny. Thank you very much.
Trust the Republicans.
Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have, and I think it's sad to watch the establishment.
There are a lot of D.C. consultants that say there's a choice for Republicans to make. We can either choose to keep our head down, to not rock the boat, to not stand for anything, or we can stand for principle. And they say if you stand for principle, you lose elections. The way to do it, the smart way, the Washington way, is don't stand against Obamacare. Don't stand against the debt ceiling. Don't stand against nothing. I want to tell you something. That is a false dichotomy. You want to lose elections? Stand for nothing. Look at the last four congressional elections, 06, 08, 10, and 12. Three of the four, we followed that strategy. 06, 08, and 12, we put our head down, we stood for nothing, and we got walloped. The one election that was a tremendous election was 2010 when Republicans drew a line in the sand. We said we stand unequivocally against Obamacare, against bankrupting the country, and we won an historic tidal wave of an election. And then, of course, all of us remember President Dole and President McCain and President Romney. Now, look, those are good men. They're decent men. But when you don't stand and draw a clear distinction, when you don't stand for principle, Democrats celebrate.
Well, look, I'm a big fan of Rand Paul's. He and I have fought side by side on fight after fight after fight in the U.S. Senate, and I anticipate we'll continue to fight side by side. He's a terrific voice for liberty.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. As our voices rise in protest, the NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.